So just, is that sounding all right? Yes, okay, great. Yeah, okay, great.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are so thrilled to be in Artisans and Advisors, surrounded by the most beautiful tiles, and to talk about individuality and creativity. And we're very, very lucky that these sessions are in conjunction with KLC School of Design, which, of course, is just right above us. It's one of the most famous design schools, and they have the most brilliant alumni. Please welcome Anna Burles. Anna Burles is the founder of Run for the Hills. Within 8 years, she now has a studio. It's 12 strong now, so it's literally going from strength to strength. Please give her a very, very warm welcome.
Thanks. Thanks very much, and hi, everyone. And I will be joining you for some bubbles after I've done this. So today, I was asked what I'd like to talk about, and I sort of had a think about it and thought, well, as a designer, you normally have a mission, some kind of mission or hope that you're, you know, a look or a thought or a feeling about your design. Some designers are sort of on a mission to create beautiful spaces. Some people want to create spaces that are eco-friendly, that are good for well-being. Some people want to design or think that their modus operandi is to design spaces that are super functional, exciting, daring, whatever. And I think that's how I got to creativity and individuality, because if I think about what I design, what we design, what the whole of our company designs, the two words that we'd really want people to say once they've experienced the design, whether it's a client and it's a residential project or it's a restaurant client and they've walked into their bar restaurant, once we've finished the styling, you'd really want them to say, it's really creative. And hopefully you'd want them to say, it's original. I don't feel like I've seen it everywhere. That's not to say that you can be truly unique as a designer. I'm not sure anybody other than Galileo or one of the greats could ever profess to be truly unique. But you just have to try your best to be as creative and as individual as you can be, so that as much as anything else, you're fulfilled creatively yourself, you're proud of your work, but crucially, you're giving value to your clients as well. So you're bringing something really exciting and different and adding value that they maybe couldn't do purely on their own. So although a lot of our projects, we do workspace design, we do restaurants, bars, cafes, work, you know, at residential, private residences, rented homes. We do all kinds of different design, and they don't all look the same. We don't have a look that people buy into, but I would hope that the thread running through them is creativity, a love of colour. You know, we're not afraid of colour. We use lots of it. We clash it. We try and encourage our clients to also not be afraid of colour. There's wonderful monochrome schemes out there, but there's also wonderful stuff to do with colour and creativity. The other first thought I had about originality generally per se as an idea was, if the best analogy I think is fashion. So we've got a pool of fashion brands out there and shops and high street labels that are really good value, and they churn out lots of great products every season, but they're all out there and we can all buy them. So really, what makes the way you put them together unique to you? And of course, the fashionistas in this world are amazing at it, aren't they? They combine high street gems, vintage one-offs, something their grandma gave them, something they had as a teenager that still fits, and they put it all together, and somehow, even though it is an H&M top or it's a, you know, D&G miniskirt, it somehow looks utterly bespoke and unique to them. So as much as anything else, I'd just say that that's what we look to do, is use a pool of available resources, content, things, products, colours, materials, finishes, fabrics, tiles, but that you use them in a slightly different way to subvert it in some way to then make it your own, so that you are using the same product, but you are making it your own. Sometimes it's about bottom left image clashing fabrics, patterns, colours in unexpected ways, because the rest of the scheme might be quite monochromatic. Other times it's about using books, art, again, to promote a feeling, a mood. Art is a great source of inspiration for us and a great way to create a sense of individuality in a scheme. So these pieces of art, giant pieces of art, were actually, I sourced them for my client, but she'd give me a brief. She wanted mountains, nature, monochrome. She wanted giant, something that people would think, wow. And she had a massive entrance hall, which was like three people sitting rooms all in one. So they had to be big. And the skulls are kind of a bit subversive, which is fits in with her personality. So that really owned it for her. And then the furniture really is a kind of nice complement to them, but they almost came second, the furniture. Sometimes it's about taking a vintage piece and then reupholstering it so that, again, you're taking a sort of classic design, but you're adding maybe a more modern fabric to it, which, again, can just give it a new life. Other times it's about being quite bold with colour or drama. In this particular setting, we went through a phase of designing. We thought, well, the colour pop is the orange sofa, and it's rattan, and it keys into the rattan and the 70s trend, and that's good, but what can we do to make it feel a bit different? So we had a kind of neutral paint palette behind it, and then just thought, no, just let's make it super, super moody and dark. A very different kind of project, but again, I was led by the art. In this case, I found a really cool contemporary artist who does these wonderful textured linen art pieces with blacks and golds. And they're quite geometric and they're quite modernist. So I thought actually a way to sort of play against that would be to go quite bohemian with the rest of the styling. And actually I think they work really nicely together. The dark green paint on the wall is a waxed khaki colour from Dulux Heritage, if you know them as a paint range. It's just a beautiful shade. And again, it's quite modern. It's quite sort of army camouflage. So again, it plays against the bohemian. Again, we love to play with fabric and pattern, mixing textures. That's a sequin tablecloth that probably cost about £20. Not very much, but it looks quite glamorous in the setting with some smoked glass on the top. So in terms of being original, trying to be original, it's the combinations of styles, eras as well. So we like to mix up eras. We wouldn't go pure mid-century on a project. We wouldn't go pure industrial, pure heritage. It's about playing with some of the eras that actually sit very comfortably together and can actually feel a little bit more relaxed than a scheme which is purely mid-century or purely industrial. So we like to play with eras. So sometimes creativity can... This is a small, very small landlocked back bedroom in an apartment, which could have been a sort of forgotten space, but actually we decided that a small space sometimes might call for it to be the biggest event creatively within the space, so that it actually has its own identity and it doesn't get lost. So here we had the idea of painting up to a certain line and then having wallpaper above that and then using art to break that line so that your eye would instantly go to the art and then also question why the line had been broken, so that it would just create a point of interest. I have to say that the decorator didn't know what to think when I asked him to do that. Other times it's about injecting a little bit of theatricality. This is a lovely sort of warehousey type brick building, and we might have been inclined to do something quite industrial or pared back, but actually the client's feminine, so we thought let's just play up to that and let's go to a forest and find some logs, get a forester to give us some, and then just work out how we can fix them into the floor and to the ceiling. So sometimes the idea or the original idea can come from us inspiration, things that we see. They can be in fashion, they can be in architecture, but we bring them into interior design. Other times, it's from the client themselves, so they might have a passion or a hobby or something they just love. And you can spring off from that, and actually, because they love it, they're more open to hearing ideas for something that creative that you could do with that. Let's say they love hats. Create an installation of hats. Have them not in a cupboard, not hidden, not in a bedroom setting. Put them on shelves in a hallway, and it becomes a feature. So sometimes that's been a really good way for us to sort of hook into the client's, perhaps not reluctance to do something a bit kind of crazy or out there, but if it relates back to them, it's about them, it's about their brand, it's about who they are. You're not pushing something on them. They're far more open to being super creative. We often do CGIs. That's a CGI, it's not a photograph. So it's a 3D visual of a space. So where we're trying to be particularly creative or trying to communicate certain ideas that we might be struggling a little bit to communicate just from mood boards or selections of furniture, sometimes we just go for it and create a visual. And we find that clients are way more likely to agree to something if they can see it, and they're not scared by it. They are excited, and they're a bit surprised, but they're just far more likely to move with that idea. This was a giant piece of wood that we found again in a forester's, and we turned it into a headboard. And the wallpaper behind it was designed by we've got a graphic designers in-house. But again, it's inspired by some tiling from a holiday photograph that the client had showed us of a place they loved. So again, it was quite a bold wallpaper, but the reason the client bought into it was because it related back to something that they'd had in their lives that they were happy with. We play with scale and proportions and eye lines. Eye lines is often the secret to creativity or spotting the creative touches that you've put into your design. So here we had to make sure that you could see through into the lovely crittle-style shower enclosure that we'd designed, and that the beautiful antique brass sanitary ware and the fittings and the tiles are visible through the mirrors and the double sink. So eye line is very important. Sometimes it's about just playing with shapes and designs of tiles. It would have been very easy for us to either just do the marble all the way down to the work surface, but we played with the idea of having a black and white mix and playing with the lines of the black tile versus the circular shape of the mirror. So again, it was just thinking, what could we do that's a little bit different and that talks to the mirror or plays against it in some way? Very fortunate to have a husband who is also an artist. So in this particular project, we'd run out of cash. We'd bought some nice furniture. We'd come up with a nice design that the client liked, but we didn't have enough money left for big pieces of art. So I literally shuffled across the room and said, could you make me something 1.3 by 1.3? And can it look good in this setting? And can it be kind of monochrome? And can it be quite abstract? And so he designed us something really quickly. And then we printed it, but we didn't put glass over it. We just didn't have the budget. We framed it nicely, but we didn't have enough budget for the glass. But sometimes it can be cheaper to make your own, especially if it's abstract. Here was a case of the client's art hadn't arrived yet from America. That's where they lived, and this was a Regent's Park apartment. So we contacted an artist friend of ours and said, would you be willing to loan some art to just give inspiration to the client? We want it to hang together. We want it to be a collage and to be not too symmetrical, but we do want it to tell a story. And they ended up buying the whole suite from the artist because it looked so great in our photos. And actually, then we got a mention in the Sunday Times, and we made sure she got a mention, and she got a deluge of sales. So it was a nice thank you to her for making our photos look great. This is an antique brass, beautiful picture rail that was my one treat in a recent project from Collier Webb, if you know them. They do lovely, they could do every finish that you could imagine on this picture rail, and the chains come in different finishes. And so we decided to hang a selection of art from it. The two middle ones are my husband's, the one on the left, the one on the right are two different artists. And again, it's just slightly off-kilter, slightly asymmetrical, but it looks very beautiful behind a very patterned sofa. Sometimes just odd placement of things can feel a bit more creative than we could have done the art in a row behind the dining table, but we decided to just sort of let the central section and the pendant, which is a very beautiful BTC ceramic pendant, just do the talking rather than the art on that occasion. This is a kid's bedroom. You can have loads of fun with kids' bedrooms. And actually, it's the one space that parents are often just go with anything to make it super exciting and fun and creative for their kiddies. So we get to clash wallpapers, different colours. We cut the wallpaper, turn it into mountain effects. It's very wonderful to do kiddies' rooms. This is a very different one, but you get the idea. It's very fun to be creative with kids' rooms. The one on the right is an interesting one because it's actually quite a clash of wallpapers. And again, the client started off with wanting quite a serene space for their little daughter. But we just played around and we were coming up with all of the different pieces of furniture which looked lovely with a very serene backdrop. And then we just did a mock-up in Photoshop and we just changed the wallpapers. And instantly, once the client saw it, she said, actually, that's far more exciting as a space for her than this very, very serene little bedroom. So again, the power of the visual helped them unlock their kind of creativity. And then they were very involved in the final selection of the wallpapers to get that clash right. So quite an adult palm next to quite a childlike wallpaper. We do lots of bars and restaurants design. These take months and months and months and lots of detailing and lots of working with contractors. And again, the challenge is the same. We've all been into lots of cool bars and restaurants, but how do you make it feel appropriate for the brand and connected to them and original? So again, we played with tiling designs. We do spend so much time on tiling designs. Though look around us, we've got so many beautiful pieces in here, and you're instantly looking at them and thinking, how could we work with that? That's amazing, but I have seen it in L decoration, so now we want to use it. It's amazing, but what border could we put on it? How could we transition it? How could we add a colour into it? Playing with that. Other commercial design projects, designing piece lighting. We design lots of lighting for our commercial projects. You have the luxury, I guess, of working with clients who are quite open to you making lots of bespoke items, but it often means that you can get something at the scale and in the style that you want that you couldn't quite find anywhere for the budget that you needed it to be. We design this image here. We started off designing the restaurants for this particular brand, and then that morphed into designing their websites, and then it ended up designing their actual cookbook, which made us zero pennies. Cookbook design is for the love of it, not for the money, but our team loved doing it, and it's on the coffee table, bookshelves, you know, and your mum sees it, and it's, again, it's something to be proud of. The scallop edge detail on the banquette is Indian inspired, this cooking for this restaurant. So we found some beautiful old vintage pieces of furniture and then sprung off from that to create a banquette, but it's more creative than your standard restaurant style seating. It's a boutique cinema that we designed before Christmas, which we'd never designed a cinema before. And it was an amazing opportunity, and the clients came to us because of our restaurant design. They knew they wanted a good restaurant and a bar in this cinema, but they thought, we won't go to a standard cinema designer because they'll probably just give us a multiplex or a boutique version of a multiplex back. Let's go to someone who has shown creativity in the way they've designed more casual, lower-end design spaces. So we got to design the bar, the restaurant, the cafe, but also the screening rooms, which was a huge learning. Had to learn an awful lot about acoustics and lighting and projections and compliance. But it was a great opportunity, and I think we pulled off a nice boutique cinema, which feels quite residential. Feels quite loungy, maybe hotel-y, rather than a cinema. So we employed an awful lot of the sort of design rules, thoughts, that we would employ in a residential project to this project to make it feel really, really cozy and welcoming and homely. So here we're clashing quite a few patterns, we're clashing some colours, we're really playing with the art, so it was a real mix of prints, photography, sculpture. Again, we got to design lots of lighting, the signage as well, which can also add lots of personality to a design. So we don't always get to design art for our residential projects, but we will often suggest it, or we'll try and design a fabric so that it's in the mix of something else, just again, so that it feels very unique to the project. another thing that I think we try and do is to let designs evolve over time. Sometimes if you try and concept everything from the beginning in the first few weeks, let's say, or the first month of the design process, you can get a little bit caught in the moment, a little bit bogged down. You can't actually think of everything for the project in that first compressed period of time. Sometimes you'll end up going through the initial concept phase, then you'll go through the initial detailing phase. You're starting to draw it up in CAD and giving it to the contractors to cost from, the joiners to work out how you're going to do joinery, lighting. And sometimes it's only really when you get to the final sourcing stage where you start coming across one-off pieces that it can completely change your direction of how you're going to design things. So sometimes we leave a fair amount of the design quite open until we're much further down the design process, because it just affords us more opportunity to do a U-turn, to make a change, to build an area of the space, whether it's a bedroom, a living room, or a corner of a restaurant, to then really let that piece that we found do the talking, and we filter everything around it. So although it might seem counterintuitive to the design process, sometimes we just like to keep things fairly open and fluid. This is a very different kind of little, it's a burger joint in Shoreditch that we've just designed, which was done on a micro budget. But I used bottom left as a curtain, and I got my seamstress that made me this dress to do it. And it's made up of about 2,000 pieces of little felt with gauze to create that curtain. Was important to get her to do it because we didn't have a huge budget for it, but we just had the idea that we wanted a chainmail style curtain that blocked out the traffic from Shoreditch High Street, but that you could ultimately peek in at the same time, so it would offer privacy as well as some view between. Some more projects there. This is a workspace project, but it was a shared kitchen within a sort of industrial style workspace. And again, we just quite like playing with new finishes, but reclaimed finishes as well. And then there's always the final styling, which is one of the most ripe times during a project to see the gaps, where you might have done a really nice architecture design, you've got some really nice furniture, you've got a really nice decorative paint finish scheme, but it might be lacking something. It might need a bit more excitement. It might need a bit more filling. You might need to juxtapose things a little bit more. So that's where really the art and the final accessories and the planting comes in. And again, that's where we often leave the sourcing of those till right at the end, when we're starting to see the design take shape, we're starting to feel the gaps, we're starting to feel where we might want to do something a little bit different. So that's kind of where I've got to. So I'll leave it here and just see if anybody's got any questions at all.
Now, I've got a microphone, so if anybody has a question, I can reach you with a microphone and then we can hear the question. Yes,
Hi. Do you ever use virtual reality when you work with your clients? Because I've seen some people using that, and is it effective?
We haven't, but our CGI chap, he's in Poland, our CGI chap, and he creates the nice renders that we do. He can then stitch those together to effectively create a kind of faux VR room set, and you put the goggles on, and maybe it's using your iPhone, and you can effectively kind of feel as if you're walking through the space. We've yet to use it with a client because no client has ever wanted to pay for it. But it's there. I think, to be honest, the CGIs communicate plenty, and you can't necessarily see the detail in the VR at the moment with the state of the technology. It's a bit blurry around the edges. It's in its infancy. But I can see that property developers would definitely use it more in the future, because if you're selling the vision of a show suite or a potential apartment decorated in X style or decorated in a more luxe style, that would be an amazing way to communicate that to customers. Just more detail at the moment. That's it. But it's exciting. Yeah. Sure. Hi.
Run for the hills. Why run for the hills? Where did that come from?
Do you know what? I run it with my husband. Yeah. So who's my business partner? I'm interiors. He's branding and graphics and art. We can't actually remember and we're not going to make up a story. I think it's a bit of a phrase. If we've had an instinct about a project, potentially a client, and we've just not been sure, are we attuned creatively, personality, objective? We've had a bit of a, you know, run for the hill. It just doesn't feel right. To be honest, it's memorable and it's fun, and we thought it keyed into our slightly young, slightly quirky, slightly eclectic design aesthetic. So
it's distinct.
It is
premonition.
Maybe. Who knows?
Hi. I know you've got your husband who obviously sources the art, but where else do you find your art?
Well, art, yes. Well, obviously Chris can design it, and he has various art names. He's exhibiting at the other art fair the remainder of the week. I find art in Saatchi Art, Artfinder, Etsy. Depends how expensive a budget you've got. Sometimes Anthropology, if you know them, I think their chairs are over there, the Beth and Grey ones. Anthropology have some good prints. Online, there's just a whole world of young art collectives. On a more fine art basis, I'd go to the London Art Fair. It's a great way of sourcing and just finding artists that you like. You then go onto their website, you get on their mailing list, and then you sometimes go to the studio, and you can often get really good prices from artists. If you go to their studio, you get a studio price rather than a gallery price. But then commissioning as well. So I've gone to the Royal College of Art before and said, look, if you've got some, you know, talented students who are just might need a commission, who kind of fit this kind of look, this concept, and they'll put me in touch with two or three. They put together a proposal. It's just kind of hunting them down. Hi.
The best one is the Affordable Art Fair.
The Affordable Art Fair. Well, it's not as affordable as some. It's great, but it's not actually that affordable compared to others. I'd say the other art fair, where my husband's exhibiting, you can get an awful lot of stuff for a really good price. And some of the print fairs, so Monica is more of a graphic print fair. So sometimes if you're not looking for an original that's, you know, a one-off, you can get a print version of it at a much better price. And it just depends. That can still look amazing on the wall if it's framed nicely. So, yeah. Hi there.
It was going back from the first question. When you're doing all the rendering process, you had that picture of the lounge, which looked unreal. Well, it looked real. It was unreal that it was so real. What process do you use for that?
We internally would use SketchUp, Google SketchUp, which is just a free 3D program, and we would create a model of the space and some of the furniture. But it looks awful, and it's not a rendered program. So you would either have to export it into Photoshop or into another program. But actually, we gave that SketchUp model to our CGI chap, and he uses a program called 3D Studio Max. He then gives us it back in his program, and it's a clay model, a white version first. It doesn't have any of the textures or colors. And then we just nail the clay model together first to get the architecture right and the shapes and the forms. Then we start adding the colours, the textures, and then finally the lighting effects. But it takes ages. So that CGI probably took a good 2 weeks of back and forth, and that was probably iteration 16 to get it looking like that. He's super talented, but he's not an interior designer, so sometimes he'll apply a wood texture, which looks like a laminate, when you've got a really specific idea in your head of a burl walnut or a vintage effect. So it's the quality of the imagery you give to them then shows in the quality of the final image, because it looks as you have it in your head, if that makes sense. But it's a long-winded process. But he's based in Poland, so he's very affordable compared to render agencies in the UK. I'd love to work with some of the amazing render agencies here, but my clients just wouldn't pay the money. So each view, if you call that a view, that was a view of the living room. We also did another view. You can't do a view of everything. So you have to decide which ones you're going to do, and that view probably cost me about, at the time, £800, £900 from him, but that doesn't count for any of my time, our time, the SketchUp model, the textures, the to-ing and fro-ing. But the equivalent view in a UK render firm would be about £2,500, £3,000, plus your time. So unfortunately, at the moment, none of my clients would pay for that, but I see the value in them, because the client then sees it, feels it, gets excited by it, and also the contractors see it. And they know that you're not going to be happy unless you see that at the end. Not a CAD drawing that they could stand behind and say, oh, I didn't realise you wanted the wood to have that aged effect. You know, so where we haven't done renders, certainly for commercial projects, they haven't had as good a finish as where we have done a render, because from the outset, the contractors and the artisans have known this is the finish that we... This is what the client is expecting. So it's been really, really good to have them, but also for pre-marketing as well, to sell it to the press. If you're opening a restaurant or a bar or a workspace, or a, you can use those CGIs when they look as good as that. You can use them in marketing. So, but it's loads of work. Loads of work. Hi.
You mentioned that you sometimes will start a project, but you are keen to avoid having a complete concept of what you want to do, but how do you then take the client with you if you then veer away from what you might have agreed with them?
Keeping them in the loop. Just keeping them in the loop. So we never present a fait accompli to a client. We don't say, right, we've taken the brief, we've returned the brief to you, let's say. So we always make sure we return it and say, are you meaning this? And where we're a bit confused about what they might mean by contemporary, urban or pared back or daring, we'll present back a few images of what we think might be daring, and they'll go, no, not that daring, or a bit more like that daring. So we've done all that process, but then we wouldn't just run off and do the whole concept and then present it a month and a half later when actually there's no more time. We would probably check in after a couple of weeks and do a sort of mood board presentation, just early. These are early thoughts. We could go down this route, we could go down this route, or even this route. They all answer your brief, but they're all actually very different, which just shows the power of design, that there is not one answer to a brief. There can be so many different ways that you could do it. So we include them, and they'll just go, emotionally, it's that one. But then even within that one, there might be an idea from one of the others that actually you'll kind of play around with it, but we just keep them in the loop so that they're never shocked or surprised by what we're presenting. That's the last thing you want. You want them to love what you're presenting and to feel that they've been part of it as well. So we're not afraid to just ping over an idea and say, we've had a thought, how about we don't do the kitchen the way we were planning to do the kitchen? How about, and if they love it, they love it. And they're very, and then over time, they learn to trust that you're not going to do anything too major without running it by them. So then they'll just say, do you know what? You've got it. We trust you. Just push us if we're being a bit reluctant or open to being pushed. Because ideally what you want to do is push people beyond their comfort zone, because otherwise why are they employing a designer for what they would perceive as a lot of money? So you want to push them beyond their comfort zone, but not so far that it's not them anymore. So that's the balance, isn't it? So you want to have brought their vision to life in the most exciting and creative way so that they feel really proud of it, but they can see themselves in it too. So the only way to do that is to have them involved, isn't it? Otherwise, it really is your design that you're then pushing on them. So just good communication and lots of nice creative meetings, which is the fun bit of their project anyway, isn't it? Rather than the build or the finance.
Hello.
Hi.
So you've obviously done already a lot of different things, so residential, restaurants, etc., even the cinema. I was wondering if you have like a dream project that you would like to do, something you haven't done yet.
Yeah, we do. And it's a really nice hotel. So it's the coming together of all the things that we've done. So it's beautiful bedrooms and spaces, and, you know, and it's the concierge or the, you know, reception, and it's the deli, and it's the cafe, and it's the bar. So we've done all of the component parts and the restaurant, but we haven't brought them all together. So we've nearly done that a few times. A couple of projects have just gone away, the budget went away, or we were too expensive and they found someone to do it for nothing. We've got a potential, says we've kind of won it, but whether it happens, don't know. But we've got a 5-star hostel, which is not quite a glammy hotel, but it's certainly going to be a very creative 5-star hostel. So it's going to have a cocktail bar on the roof, a tiki kind of bar. It's going to have a restaurant, a deli, a kitchen, a shared kitchen, a laundry. So we've not designed a laundry before, but I'm sure we could design a nice laundry, you know, a creative laundry. So that's been, it's gone through planning. We've been selected. Fingers crossed. And then hopefully once we've done that, we would be able to then give confidence to the hotel operators that, yes, we can do it. Because in my career, I've just you have this all the time. Before you've designed a restaurant, you haven't designed a restaurant. Before you've done a job in, you haven't done it. And we all know that it's about aptitude. and it's about passion and dedication, and you can learn. Whatever you don't know, you can learn. So at every stage, we hadn't designed a cinema till we designed a cinema. We just got lucky with a client who could see that we had skills and trusted us. And then also, we would just put our hands up whenever we didn't know anything. Say, do you know what we're not feeling comfortable about? Whether we've got the fabrics right in the screening rooms, or the little lamps that we had in between each sofa. Can it be a shiny fabric, or is that going to annoy people when they're watching the film? Will it shine in there? And they're going, yes, it will. So it has to be matte, you know. So they were just, but we just put our hands up and say, we don't actually know. This is what we're thinking. But is there someone that does, or the acoustic, or the fire ratings, or can you partner us with someone that could just run over our design technically and just make sure that we're not going to mess up in any way? So just putting your hands up and saying where you don't know.
Hi. Do you find that you have to seek out your clients, or do your clients come to you through word of mouth?
Or? It's a bit of both. It's a bit of both. In the beginning, I think it was about getting my portfolio out there, and then it was about just making myself kind of visible. And then once you've got a few projects under your belt, there is a bit of word of mouth that happens. But if you think in the residential world, and I think unless you've got a look that people really buy into that look, and there are lots of wonderful designers out there who have a look, and there are people who want that for their home, there might be more word of mouth there. But because we're not particularly looking for those kind of, we're looking for people who've got their own thing going on that will, so then they're less connected. Other tough thing about residential is that no one really sees it other than their friends who may not have the same taste. They only see the photographs. Whereas the beauty, so we've had a certain amount of word of mouth, and I've got one singer client who I've been working with for 7 years. And she's wonderful, and I've done 6 of her homes, rented ones, properties abroad, and we have lots of regular work from her, and that's great. But she's a kind of one-off where I've had repeat work. Others, it's literally say bye-bye, and you literally never, you might get an odd email from them to say, how are things going? The house still looks great, or can you add an extra layer? But it doesn't really happen that way so much for us. Whereas in the hospitality industry, which is one of the reasons we wanted to go into it anyway, because we just thought we could be more theatrical in commercial spaces, and also that clients would have maybe slightly more bigger budgets to do updates every couple of years, because you have to stay the hot new restaurant. You can't just rest on your laurels. And actually what we found is that it's way easier for us to get that work because people see your work and they experience it and they sit in the banquette. And they look at the bar, they see the materials on the bar, and they like it. And then they'll ask the chefs who designed your restaurant, and they'll say, oh, there's a nice company called Run for the Hills, they're nice to work with. And then we'll get direct briefs off the back of, we saw your work at Cricket, we like it. So we're finding that definitely is easier to get work in the restaurant business. But I still love resi, just still love doing both. I think it's much more layered. You know, you're styling the bed with 4 throws, 2 blankets, 4 sets of pillows, you know, you're putting books on the bedside table and sculptures, and you've got art, and it's just so layered, whereas it's less in a restaurant. So I still like doing both. So we've got 2 really nice resi projects on at the moment. One is in the south of France, huge apartment in an old hotel for a very stylish couple, so that's really cool, and quite edgy. They're really quite edgy. He has 200 pairs of shoes, and a lot of the clothes have holes in, but they're very well-designed holes. And the other is totally different, which is 2 listed barns in the Cotswolds. It's on a farm. The clients are the farming family. And they're going to turn it into sort of a big group. You would be 25 people, and you would hire the whole place. And there are 10 bedrooms, so you hire it as a kind of vacation rental. So that's residential, but it's on a commercial kind of scale because there are 10 bedrooms and there are loads of extra options for accommodation and a sort of commercial type kitchen for people to cater when they're there in a swimming pool under a farm building roof. And so it's just, that's a country project. And then the one in Nice is very edgy, and they're all different and they're all wonderful in their own way, and some pay more than others, but sometimes some are just so good and so fun that even if the design fees aren't amazing, we still do them because we know we're going to get an amazing case study out of it. We're going to get great word of mouth from the client. We're probably going to get really good press. So some of the projects that we've had in the press are not necessarily the biggest paying or the biggest projects. They just happen to be lovely projects that photograph really beautifully, and that gets us some work as well. So you don't think you make your millions out of being an interior designer unless you're one of the top. But anyway, it's great fun, and that's why we do it.
We've got time just for one more question.
Hi. I know that you said that you've got a group of 12, but I checked out your website before coming here, and I know you have branding, so I just wanted to see in terms of your structure, like how many
so
juniors.
So it's literally divided down the middle. So I've got a team of six in my interior design side, and Chris has got a team of six in his branding and graphics and art side. So they'll be graphically designing websites, menus, signage, brands, but they'll also be doing illustrations and art. But it's literally split down the middle. So sometimes they'll do a branding project that we're not involved with at all. Other times we'll design a boutique cinema together, and they did even the flashing idents on the screen, you know, when you walk in and it says, turn off your mobile phone and welcome to Tivoli. So they'd even designed those. So it's nice when it actually comes together, because then the two sides really talk to each other as well. The brand really fits the interiors, and the interiors really speak to the brand. So it's exciting when we get to do that.
About you, but I think we could be here all afternoon. I've just got this feeling. Anna, not only are you a great designer, but you're a brilliant communicator.
Oh, thank you.
Goodness me, if I was your client, I would be so happy. And I love the fact that you you say, you know, that your the project should reflect who the owners are, and it shouldn't just be foisted upon them. Thank you so much for sharing your ideas and your creativity. London Design Week is all about sharing knowledge. And the great educators, of course, in our industry at KLC School of Design, if you are interested in them, I think there are some leaflets
yes,
out there.
Yes, there are some leaflets and some postcards. And just as a personal plug, I couldn't have had a better training than KLC. I went to do the course, and I'd already been a creative director in various other design-type agencies, and I thought I would get lots out of it technically, that I'd learn everything I needed to know, but actually I got loads out of it creatively, so I'm a huge fan of KLC.
I think there are, as well as short courses, there's also a special day that's coming up in March. Amy, when is that?
Next Saturday.
So you can learn a bit more. Amy's here if you've got any KLC questions, but in the meantime, let's give a very big round of applause to Anna.
No, thank you. Thanks, everyone.